Welcome back to Radio Physics, a collaboration with the Aspen Center for Physics, KDNK Community Radio in Carbondale, and physics students from local schools and beyond. Interns spend 2 weeks working at the center during the summer and get to talk one-on-one to some of the prominent physicists who are here. I'm Marisa Walbert, and I'm hosting today's episode, which is being recorded here at the Aspen Center for Physics. Our intern today is Sasha Fielder, who is a rising senior at Colorado Rocky Mountain School. He will be interviewing Csaba Csaki. Csaba is a particle theorist, working mainly on physics beyond the standard model. He got his bachelor's degree at Eötvös University in Budapest, Hungary in 1993, and his PhD from Massachusetts Institute of Technology under the supervision of Lisa Randall in 1997. Subsequently, he was a Miller Fellow at the University of California, Berkeley from 1997 to 1999, and a J. Robert Oppenheimer Fellow at Los Alamos from 1999 to 2001. He moved to Cornell in 2002, where he is now the Newman Professor of Physical Sciences. He was a Department of Energy Outstanding Junior Investigator, elected a Fellow of the American Physical Society, and awarded the Humboldt Research Prize in Germany. He is a trustee and general member of the Aspen Center for Physics, and he is one of the co-conveners of the Theory Frontier for Snowmass 2021, and was awarded a Simons Fellowship in 2022. Take it away, Sasha.
Great to have you here, Csaba.
Hi, Sasha.
Hi. So you're here as a particle theorist to get started. What does that mean? What do you do? What is your day-to-day look like? What does it mean to be a particle theorist?
So particle theorists have a very broad spectrum. So physics and particle physics is an experimental science. So eventually, whatever we do has to relate to, you know, trying to understand, you know, the laws of nature. Yes, and you do that through experiments. But theorists have, you know, very important roles on different parts of this spectrum. So there are some theorists who are very closely aligned with the experiments. So we call those phenomenologists. And, you know, on one end of that spectrum, there are some particle theorists who really directly help the experiments. So some of them really directly do calculations that essentially allow the experiments to be able to analyze their data. Yes. And then there's the other spectrum of particle theorists, the other end of the spectrum of particle theorists, who are really thinking more about fundamental questions, trying to understand, you know, what the laws of nature could be at distances that we haven't checked yet. And then ideally also coming up with ideas how to build experiments for you know, testing those theories. You know, if you just have a theory but it's never testable, then that's really not something interesting. So we try to not do that kind of stuff. So whenever we sort of come up with new theories, we always want to make sure that there's some new prediction for that, that that's something that you can test in experiments. They're trying to find what those experiments are, and then we would, you know, try to make sure that those experiments are actually built. So I'm somewhere in the middle. So I'm one of those people who are sort of thinking about, you know, what the physics could be at the next set of experiments. The current ones are the LHC, and then there may be, you know, hopefully, you know, after the LHC, hopefully there will be other experiments. You know, we don't know that. I mean, That's something under discussion right now. So I'm really trying to understand, you know, what those theories could be. But what you need to understand is that, you know, it's not just some random thing you wake up one morning and come up with. These new theories have to obey all the constraints, all the experimental constraints that have been established for centuries. And so it's actually very hard to come up with a new theory that actually would do something interesting. And it's not already experimentally excluded. Yeah? So that's the name of the game.
Before you were a theoretical physicist, do you think there was like a moment where you were like, I need to be a theoretical physicist. This is so interesting to me. This is what I want to do.
So I kind of knew that I'm going to be a physicist in high school, I think. You know, I went to all the... I grew up in Hungary, and, you know, there's a very vibrant, you know, sort of high school competition scene there. So I participated in all of that, and I went to the Physics Olympics when I was a senior. So I you know... Now, when did I decide that I became a theoretical physicist? Well, the truth is I was never really good at experiments. I would like to, but... So, also somehow, you know, in Eastern Europe, there wasn't a lot of money when I grew up for experiments, so it was much more theory-focused. So that kind of, you know, set me along this path.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. You've done a lot of work on the standard model, the description of the universe for three out of the four fundamental forces. It's been pretty successful, but obviously incomplete because we don't know how gravity fits into that. In your view, what's the biggest thing that the standard model like can't explain and that we're still trying to figure out?
Right. So there are several things. I think probably currently... One of the most pressing questions is, what is dark matter?
Yeah.
I don't know, our listeners may have heard that, you know, besides the matter that we observe, we have very good evidence, you know, from mostly gravitational observations that there's another type of matter around that is not visible. That's why it's called dark matter. So, you know, it doesn't interact with light, with photons. It makes up the majority of the matter in the universe, about 20% of the total energy density, and maybe 5% is ordinary matter. And we know it's around. It's very likely some sort of a particle, though it doesn't have to be. So trying to understand what that is, I think that's one of the biggest questions. Another question that I have been thinking quite a bit about is related to the Higgs boson.
Yes.
and the question of, you know, why the properties of the Higgs boson are the way they are. It's actually very hard to understand how such a particle, you know, could exist, and it's really unique from the point of view of looking at all the particles that are present in the standard model. There's nothing else like that, and the properties are actually quite puzzling, so we call that the hierarchy problem. So maybe we'll talk about that later. So that to me is a pretty big problem. Then the question of, you know, why there is matter rather than antimatter.
Yeah.
And how was sort of, you know, matter created? I mean, it looks like in the standard model, matter and antimatter are almost exactly equivalent. There's a tiny little bit of asymmetry between them.
Yeah.
And really what happened in the universe is that that after the Big Bang, there was essentially equal amount of matter and antimatter created. But because of this tiny little bit of asymmetry, you know, when they all annihilated, because matter and antimatter annihilates, yes, and just creates radiation. If you read, you know, Angels and Demons from Dan Brown, you probably heard about that, yes? So essentially all of those actually have annihilated. And what we see around as matter is the tiny little bit of leftover that is due to the asymmetry between matter and antimatter. And exactly how that happened, what is the source of that? That's a really exciting question. Also, you know, another exciting question is, you know, matter, what we see is, you know, the elementary particles are electrons and protons. Protons are made up of quarks. But it turns out that there are actually heavier versions of these particles around. So for the electron, there are two other particles that are very similar. They are just heavier, called the muon and the tau. So essentially, particles come in families. And most of the properties of these particles are the same, except they are much heavier. And it's kind of hard to understand, you know, why some of these are so much heavier than the other, you know, why we have this triplication. So we call this the flavor problem or the flavor puzzle. Wow. Of the standard model. So I would say, yeah, I guess within particle physics, these are kind of, I would say, the biggest questions.
So going back to your most, probably most theoretical physicists' fascination with this Higgs boson, for listeners at home who maybe don't know what that is or have heard of it, how do you explain like the Higgs field and its role in physics? And what is that?
So you know, the listeners may remember, you know, there was the big discovery, you know, a little more than 10 years ago of the Higgs boson. And so this is related to the fact that within the standard model, so this standard model is sort of our description of everything we know about elementary particle physics. Actually, you know, there are good reasons to believe that all the particles are actually fundamentally massless. So there are very strong reasons to think that the elementary particles fundamentally don't have any mass.
Wow.
Okay. And for example, like the photon, yes, the particle that is responsible for electromagnetism, which is a truly massless particle, and it travels with the speed of light. And within the standard model, you know, essentially every particle would like to be massless. The electron would like to be massless. The quarks would like to be massless. But of course, we know that they are not. And so the question is how to reconcile those fundamental questions, ideas, which are called gauge symmetry, but maybe, you know, I won't go into the details about that here. You know, that would like these particles to be massless, with our observation that actually they are not massless. For example, the W and the Z bosons, so those are heavier versions of the photon, they are very heavy. So they are like 80, 90 times the mass of the proton. So they are very heavy. So where did that mass come from? Okay, so that was the big question. And this was a very long, you know, it was a puzzle that started, you know, already in the 50s, 60s. And then, you know, Peter Higgs came up with this idea, you know, actually taking, you know, many other people's contributions that maybe it is true that the particles actually fundamentally are massless, and they only appear to be massive to us due to the interaction of another field that is actually filling all of space. Okay, so this would be sort of this hypothetical Higgs field. Now we know that this is actually the right idea. So the idea is that there's this field that is, you can think of it like a fluid that permeates everything. Yes, and it's the interaction with this fluid that we call it the Higgs condensate. Okay, that would actually essentially slow down the motion of these particles, essentially appear as if they were massive rather than massless. So the mass wouldn't be a fundamental property of these particles, but would be a property of the interaction between this fluid in which, you know, these particles are propagating. So, like, if you think, you know, one of the analogies that people usually make is if you have honey and you try to drag a ping pong ball, yes, you know, it's much harder to drag it. So the more particle feels, you know, interacts, the stronger it interacts with this Higgs fluid, you know, the heavier it will appear. Now there's one big catch here, yes, because, you know, I'm telling you these words that, oh, you know, there's a fluid that is penetrating everything, and, you know, if you know the history of science, you may have heard the same sentences in the context of what used to be called ether, you know, in the 19th century. Yes, people have already said these words because they were trying to understand, you know, what is the medium in which, you know, just light and electromagnetic waves propagate. Yes, when you have waves like, you know, ordinary water waves, yes, you need a medium, you need water. Now when we are talking to each other, there's a, you know, a wave that is going through the sound wave, yes, and it needs air. So it was a natural assumption when people learned about electromagnetism that, you know, there should be another medium for electromagnetism, and they called it ether, yes? And they were searching for that, yes? That would have been another thing, just like what I said. a medium that is penetrating everything, and that's where, you know, and you may have heard that, you know, there was a big experimental program in the 19th century to look for this ether, and then people understood that, well, such an ether does not exist. And out of this came the theory of relativity. Yes, because an ether would have provided a special, preferred frame for you, yes, which is the rest frame of this ether. Yes, and the experiments show that there is no such preferred frame. So now what you should really ask is, how come I'm, you know, resuscitating this old idea of ether and not run into this same problem that, people in the 1850s and 60s ran into with the ether for electromagnetism? And this is what makes the Higgs field a very special field, because it has to be a very special form of ether, which looks the same in every reference frame. So it has to be something called the relativistic version of ether. Okay? And that's why the Higgs boson is very different from all the other particles, because it's got to be what we call a scalar particle. That's a scalar means that it looks the same in every reference frame. Okay, so it's something that's why we had to postulate a completely different kind of object, which was never seen before. Yes, because otherwise, you know, if you looked like at a particle like the electron and wanted it to provide the fluid, that would be excluded by the same reasoning that excluded ether back in 1860. Yes, but the Higgs boson, there's one special way to do this. Yes, it sounds a bit crazy. There's one special way to do it, to have this ether that is relativistic, that looks the same in every reference frame. Okay, so that was sort of the idea back in the 1960s that this is what we should be looking for. And this is what makes the Higgs boson so special, that it's really different. It's a scalar versus, you know, all the other particles not being scalars, so they look different in different reference frames. But this one should have this special property. So that was the assumption, that such a thing exists. And then the Higgs boson would be sort of the fluctuation, the quantization of this field itself, of this fluid. Okay, so the idea was that if this fluid really exists, then itself should have some excitations, which usually in particle physics, the excitation of a field will correspond to a particle. So that's the Higgs boson. So to prove that, you know, this whole theory is right, yes, you had to discover the actual fluctuation of this all-penetrating fluid, wow, which is the Higgs boson.
Yeah.
So people started to search for this, you know, in the 1970s, and they built bigger and bigger accelerators. And you see, the real problem is that, of course, you know, as I explained to you, the lighter the particle is, the more weakly it couples to the Higgs boson. So the particles that we are made out of are the lightest particles. So the Higgs boson will have just very, very weak coupling to ordinary particles, and it will want to couple to the really heavy objects. So that was partly why it was so difficult to discover it. And also it turned out to be itself very, very heavy, at least on the scale of the known particles.
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. So that's what it was, you know. So then eventually it was discovered at the LHC in 2012. Wow. After a huge, you know, program, and yeah.
So this is a big thing, right, that this Higgs boson. And now, do we know of how it works exactly, and like how usable is it? Like, are there alternatives we're looking for? This the end all be all?
So you know, before the discovery of the Higgs boson, of course, there were alternatives.
Yeah.
I was one of the people who tried to, find other kind of ways of giving mass to particles.
Yeah.
That's the main thing, yes, that if the Higgs boson hadn't existed, something else would have had to give masses to the particles. Yes, so there were other ways to do it. Yeah, so in particular, you know, like just because, you know, I was the one to do it with my collaborators, you know, we had something called the Higgsless theory. And, you know, it was, you know, I was very excited. You know, we proposed this like 10 years before the Higgs was discovered. And, you know, it would have given masses to the particles, but there would not have been a scalar, but there would have been other kind of, so there would have been other kind of particles. It was sort of still a complete theory. And it's not like, okay, so if there is no Higgs, then there's nothing, yes? Yeah. There would have been other kind of particles present in that theory. Then there's another version, what is called Technicolor. So that was another alternative to the traditional Higgs mechanism. So it turns out that, you know, in another sector of the standard model, which is called the strong interaction, there is actually another way of producing masses without an elementary scalar particle, and it happens dynamically. Okay, so essentially you will still have this fluid, yes, but the fluid wouldn't be, you know, due to the fluctuation of an elementary scalar particle, but it would be sort of due to the very strong dynamics that will force, you know, two non-scalar particles to condense. And so that's what was called Technicolor. And that was very exciting also because it's something that we already have seen to happen in nature. So people thought that maybe, you know, there's just another version of this. That's why it's called Technicolor. It's sort of, color is sort of the theory of strong interactions. And then, you know, this is, you know, Technicolor is sort of a nicer color. So sort of, you know, a scaled up version, you know, yeah. Technicolor, you imagine, you know, a big screen in front of you. And so now these theories are excluded. Okay.
Yeah.
We know that there is an elementary scalar particle. And not only that, 12 years have passed since the discovery of the Higgs boson. And we have started not only to know that such a Higgs particle exists, but also started to actually measure the detailed properties of this particle very carefully. So now we have an about, you know, 5 to 10% accuracy on the coupling of this Higgs boson to the heavier particles. It's very hard, again, to measure the coupling to the light particles because they are so super tiny that that we have not seen those. The ones that are heavier, you can start measuring the coupling of the Higgs. And it is in agreement with the original predictions. So you know, the closer you get, the smaller this error bar becomes.
Yeah.
The less room there is for alternatives.
Yeah.
So I think what we know for sure is that there is a Higgs boson, but it looks more or less like the prediction. But there's still room for interesting things.
Yeah.
So one idea is that, for example, this Higgs boson itself, maybe, though it's a scalar because of the things I explained to you, but maybe it's not elementary, but it's a composite itself. Maybe the Higgs boson is made out of some, you know, other... is a bound state of other particles, and you know, if we get to the hierarchy problem, this would be a welcome welcome addition. So those models are also getting squeezed because, you know, those models would predict these composite Higgs models that there is a Higgs-like particle. You know, it mostly looks like the standard model Higgs, but then it will start having deviations in its coupling. Yes. So the more precisely you measure these couplings, the less room there will be for the Higgs to actually be a composite.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's you know, one of the things that the LHC is starting to, you know, really, you know, constrain, because you know, it is measuring the couplings, and also it's measuring, you know if the Higgs was in fact a composite, there would be other particles around. And it's also starting to look for those at higher and higher energies. And right now it's not seeing any of that. So it's right now it's starting to look more and more like it's just an elementary Higgs, like it was predicted in 1964 or whenever the theory was written down.
Yeah. Wow. So there's a lot a lot more to do.
Right, absolutely, yes.
Well, thank you for your time today. Yeah. I think we learned a lot, yeah.
Thank you very much.
Yeah.
Thank you. We hope you enjoyed this Radio Physics. For more information about our internship program and events at the Aspen Center for Physics, please visit our website at aspenphys.org or follow us on social at aspenphysics.